Syndication Station, the weekly podcast where we talk about old television shows, TV shows you may not have seen before, and, you know, just hang out.
Life.
Yeah, you know, couch potato shit. What are good
Life
Cheetos?
In general.
I like the crunchy Cheetos. I don't like the poofy Cheetos. Oh, my name's Mike, and I'm your co-host, along with Dom and Josh. Say hello, boys.
Hey there.
Hi. Hi, guys.
That's all. Okay, see you guys later. Have a good night.
That's a good second episode we did.
That was a good one.
Well, I liked the part where Mike said hi.
Well, leave your comments about Mike saying hi.
Guys, why don't we tell our audience what we've been up to since our premiere episode last week? And if anybody's been abducted by aliens since we watched The X-Files, because that's what happens when you watch
you
it.
You know, I gotta say, so. I've noticed some government officials watching me since we did that episode. But other than that, I've been reading and... Other than that, I've been reading people's comments about that episode and this episode and shipping out shirts for Fantasy Fiction, the other show Josh and I do. And we shipped a shirt to New Zealand, which was incredible. And when I wrote the shipping label, I almost wrote the Shire and then crossed it out, but I didn't.
To the Shire. Take this to Middle Earth, please.
They would have known where that was. They would have got there. Eagles would have flown.
Yeah, Eagles would have taken there. Goddamn.
I feel like I would have actually been in trouble if I put Mordor. They would have been like, oh shit.
You would have gotten it scanned.
We cannot let mail go to Mordor.
Okay, one does not simply
the ring
deliver could parcels be the ring. To Mordor, you guys.
How about you, Mike? What were you up to?
I just watched The X-Files since last episode. That's all I've been doing.
Did you even watch TNG, Mike?
I didn't.
You've been watching X-Files nonstop.
I didn't eat. We watched that first episode of The X-Files, and I was like, man, this show's great. And now I'm halfway through the fourth season.
Oh, what? Wow. That was a week ago.
Dude, I've been marathoning the show. I've been watching The X-Files, I guess editing Smart Guys. I guess I should probably say that, right? Or something. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah,
whatever.
Sure.
Let me pretend like I've been doing that so people don't get pissed off. And we did an episode of Continue Cast, and I rewatched Encounter at Farpoint, which I had said before I watched a couple months ago, and man... Woo! Got a lot to talk about tonight. How about you, Josh? What have you been up to in the last week?
I did everything you did except for all the things you said.
I had Dracula teeth inside my mouth. Yeah, that's
the
difference.
Yeah, and I had my wiener tucked back between my legs.
That makes it better.
Because I'm a man.
Sometimes I like to do that. Sue me.
I like to look in the mirror and just be like, who's been a bad panicula?
Panicula.
Did you say panicula?
I did. I said it. That's our next.
You know what I saw today? I saw on I follow the nostalgia subreddit,
yeah.
And someone had posted a picture of Cat Kong, which was about the cat. That's
from
a kid's book. It's kind of like Panicula. Oh wait, no, Panicula was like a novel, wasn't it?
It was a novel. Yeah.
It was a book.
It was
a
children's novel.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Because
it was a series of novels. The next, I think, they were the Halliday Inn. And
oh
the celery stalks at midnight.
The
oh,
celery
yeah.
stalks at midnight. I do remember that.
Get at your yeah. boy. Get on my level. Go ahead, Dom.
But Cat Kong was a picture book about a giant cat who wreaks havoc on a town. And then I think Dogzilla comes in and kills it with its stinky cat breath.
His name is Clifford, the big red dog.
His name is not Clifford.
Dude, you're blowing my mind. This is fantastic. You better send me a copy of this book. You have to send it to the Shire in Middle-earth.
The Shire in Mordor.
Hole in the ground.
Mordor, care of the Shire.
Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
That's pretty good. You guys, I'm sorry, Dom, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, I am ready to talk some MFN Encounter at Farpoint.
MFN TNG?
I got a page of notes.
On SS?
I also drew some people. I drew Q. It's not a great drawing of Q.
Q's pretty tough to draw.
I drew a bunch of guys. You said draw pictures on a paper, right? And then talk about how good.
Yeah,
you draw. Them
yeah, that's what the podcast
for the podcast.
Is.
You draw a picture. Okay. On them.
Well, let's get into it then.
I was going to ask if you guys were ready to talk about Star Trek. This is great. Radio, great podcasting. Okay, guys, Star Trek The Next Generation, first episode, Encounter at Farpoint, What did you think? But first, why don't you explain to me and to our audience, what is Star Trek? Tell us what Star Trek is.
Oh my God! That's
if you get it wrong,
one.
You get off the podcast. You have to leave.
Star Trek is a wagon train in the stars show where they go and have an adventure every week in space, and it's a universe where humanity has set aside its differences and live in peace with other races in
and to kick some Romulan ass.
Bingo.
And Picard, he's got bullets across his chest. Like,
yeah, he's got a like a bandolier going on.
Yeah, that's
on.
What I'm talking about. That's an, and he's got a bandana. He smokes a cigar and he spits.
Yeah, yeah.
He rides a donkey, which is kind of weird. I mean, you'd think he'd ride a horse, but
it's a space donkey.
He has to get up and down the canyon, so you need a burrow. You need something really stout and strong to do that. But
stout.
So Star Trek was the original series, or TOS as it's known, was in the 60s and was Gene Roddenberry's imagining of utopia society, and then they fight guys in lizard costumes. Whatever. That's for somebody else's book report, not for this show. TNG, The Next Generation, which is what we're going out on our maiden voyage. Oh my God, do you like that?
Oh my God, I have butt cancer.
Alt F4, everybody escape. That's it.
Alt F4. That's
it. Dude, that gives you cheats, man.
Hacks.
So TNG, or The Next Generation again, is exactly what Josh said. It is a continuation of Gene Roddenberry's vision of a utopian society where all of our problems are solved. So we have to
except
make up
for the huge problems that they come
across. So we have to make up new ones by exploring the galaxy and getting into situations.
Yeah, the top doctor, number one doctor guy said, "Hey, everybody, we fixed everything.
Yep.
We need problems.
Let's go get into a situation every week that can threaten our very existence. Let's go do that."
We built the Enterprise and put some guys on it, put some goofy looking guys on it, and they sent it out there.
You know, we need a guy with green eyes, we need a guy with lizard eyes, and we need a guy who's not white. Okay, that's
you got a robot?
We'll
bring the robot.
Bring the robot too.
They went heavy on the not white guys in this show.
Yeah, they did, which is great. And like in the original series, because it was the 60s, they were like, well, we will have black people on the show, but they have to be aliens, because black people are black people is aliens.
Right.
And on this show, they got away from that a little bit, thank God, because it's so uncomfortable to watch.
In like that first scene with the grid and Q appears, there's a moment where a siren starts going off, and it's really annoying.
Dude,
and Picard's like, stop that! Turn that
turn
off!
That
or
off.
And I felt like that was Picard, and this was a typical Star Trek setting where, like, you know, the camera starts shaking, the siren's going off, smoke is appearing, and that tends to happen in the show, but it isn't like this big annoying sequence that is like a trope of the show. Right. And I thought that him saying that felt like telling the audience, hey, that old show that you remember, well, this show is kind of like that, but we don't do that. This is about different stuff.
Right.
Bingo, dude. That's exactly it. It was like he was dismissing away the old show. Either that or he's telling Troy to shut the fuck up, because she's like, I feel emotions! And he's like, stop that! Like, he says it over her.
Dude. Someone's getting
woman,
up.
Woman, quiet. Men are doing things. And I was like, wow, this is a really utopian future. No, I'm just kidding.
Dude, fucking Picard hates Worf in these first couple episodes.
It's so good.
He can't stand it.
He hates
it. It's so good. All right, hold on. Well, he is French. So before we get into that, let's set the stage.
Uh-huh.
And Dom, you did it. That's actually a fantastic jumping off point. Is like this show in the first episode does a great job of shrugging off its shoulders everybody's expectations of this show just aping the original. And while you see a couple conventions like throughout the first season that are sort of like callbacks to the original series because they don't want the audience to be too uncomfortable, it's a great the tone in the show is set. It's a more of a philosophic adventure. They dealt with like ethical conflicts, idealistic political overtones. And an android who wears lipstick and gets fucked by a lesbian who's possessed by a ghost or something. I don't know. But that's later
in
the first season.
Yeah, that's in Poltergeist 4.
So the show starts off. It's this grand sweeping opening shot of like the new Enterprise. The Enterprise
D. That first shot is awesome. It still kind of holds up. Honestly.
It's still good.
It still gives you that feeling of like, hey guys, you're about to see a TV show about something huge. You're going to see some characters, right. But this thing is huge.
Right. Bigger than all of us. And the reveal shot of Picard is fantastic when he comes out of the shadows.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? And it, you know,
where he's standing in that doorway, it's amazing.
It's the first shot of this show, this pilot, is so good. The music, you know, he's like Captain's Log, and he does the thing after a little bit. The music kind of sucks or whatever, but you know, it's
the music
good.
From the original motion picture. That's where it's from.
I knew
just reused
Josh,
it again.
I have a note right here with an asterisk, and I wrote from the original motion picture ?
Yeah, it is.
I couldn't find it online to watch it.
I have a note that says. That first shot of the ship, nerds must have been going off the chain.
In 87.
Because at the time, seeing that scene, you're like, oh, fuck.
Dude, I know.
Yeah, man.
And then we go, dude, it's the warp core and everything, and you get double miniskirts. Like, two hot chicks walk past each other right away.
Yeah,
and you're
they
like,
blast you with two miniskirts. You're like, and you're like, this is
the
future.
Boldly
yeah.
go, TNG. What's up?
Yeah, I have to say, this might be the perfect pilot for kind of the perfect show because it has everything. And in, again, it's 2 hours, so they have a lot of time. Right. But in that time, they introduce to you, they're like, you're going to see romance. You're going to see old romance. You're going to see wacky guys. You're going to see Data. He's going to learn about life, what it is to be a human.
Dude, it's so great, man. I have my problems, like, technically with this first episode. You know, the production value is not – well, the first half – let's talk about the first part of this episode. It's not
okay. – okay.
It feels incredibly different than the second half. It looks and sounds like it was shot in a high school library over like a weekend. Everything feels flimsy and plasticky. The cameras move. There's weird zoom-ins.
The shots are long.
Yeah, there's zoom-ins instead of dolly-ins. Mm-hmm. You know, it almost feels like they shot the first half to pitch it to networks. Mm-hmm. And this show was not picked up by a network. This show was the very first show to ever go exclusively into syndication.
This was Saturday afternoon on where we live, Channel 17,
PHL 17. Yes, it was, Josh. Yeah, this was the first. This was also the first and only series to ever win an Emmy, or a series that was exclusively in syndication to win an Emmy.
Right.
So what that means is, and where we got the name for our show is that a syndicated television show was a show that gets picked up by either local affiliates or networks to play in non-primetime slots, but this show was played in primetime just by local affiliates or local networks, as opposed to national networks like ABC, CBS, Fox.
Crazy.
In the 80s it was, considering cable was brand new.
Yeah, they pay only for the rights to show the show. They didn't do anything to produce it. It's awesome.
It was an independently produced show.
It was a new frontier.
It absolutely was. So like the first half of Encounter at Farpoint, if you watch them as two separate halves, it really feels like a pilot, like a pitch pilot. And then the second half, it's I don't know. Okay, listen, here's the thing. I've watched the show beginning to end probably half a dozen times, and I know little to nothing about the production of it. So if somebody knows more about this than me, feel free to tell me. Like, I have things to say about the show, or I might know some things about some writing of some episodes that won Emmys or whatever, but that's just because I'm a nerd. But I mean, like, as far as the business end of it, it almost feels like they went into a pitch session and they were like, check this out. It's Star Trek. And networks were like, no. And then whoever, I don't know if it was Roddenberry. I know he was like dying at the time. Oops, is that not okay?
Well, they had this planned after Star Trek four, I guess, right? Because they were still making movies
from the
up until 91.
Yeah.
Was Undiscovered Country was 91, I think, or 90 or something. So they knew that they could do this, I think, but I mean, this is television in the 80s still. It's not Game of Thrones, you know. They weren't fucking going on location. It was all studio. It was all there's very noticeable blue screen in most of it.
Right.
Special effects at the time were still super impressive. Except for that shot where the ship, I think it comes back from its first commercial break, and the ship is sitting right outside of that big grid that they run into.
Yeah.
And it's honestly Enterprise.jpg. It's not moving. There's no effects.
It's like the composite of the model. They were like, put the model from the blue screen and then use some of the, it, you know what it looks like? It looks like
Gary, cut out this photo of the Enterprise.
It looks like the Enterprise ran into the ending special effects from the original motion picture. You know what I mean? Like when they're going through time. It's like, did we end up in the movie? What happened, number one? Well, he wasn't in the shot then, but dude, I wonder if that was the case, you know. Not to get like super like industry talk or whatever, but if they were like, hey, this is what we could do, everybody passed on it, and then they came back and they were like, fuck it, just give us all the money and we'll make the second half of it and then we'll air it wherever.
Gene Roddenberry was like, check it out, I got my big swinging Star Trek cock. All right. We're gonna make this, everyone's gonna want to watch it because it's fucking Star Trek.
Because it's Star Trek. Dude, it's like, okay, here's the pitch. The new captain, he's French. So already people are gonna hate him.
He's French, but he's English.
But he'll make them love him, right? Also,
yeah, no, they were
Spock's
like,
get this,
check this out.
But
check this out right now. They were like, check this out. You don't like the French captain? That's fine. You don't have to like him. Because there's two captains. There are two captains in this show.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, I don't believe this. And they were like, oh, yeah, check out this motherfucker without a beard. And they were like, he can probably grow a beard, but you
He'll
got
grow a
yourself
beard.
A deal.
Only time will tell. Only time will tell.
But this show has two captains, right? I mean, you know.
Well, they replaced Spock, who was the antithesis of Kirk, with just like another human.
Well, no,
they needed to throw in a bunch of aliens. Like, I don't know, they wanted to have more diversity, but at the same time, like a Vulcan, who like nobody cares about Vulcans in real life, you know. So they're like, I don't know, this guy's, give him a trombone and have him be from Alaska.
And he's from Alaska, I think.
He's from Alaska, yeah.
Well, do you think that Riker is Spock's double? I think it's Data. Because he had bones at the end of the first half when McCoy shows up as an admiral. McCoy from the original series, Dr. Bones. Dr. McCoy Bones.
Way more southern, too.
Yeah, he shows up and he's like, you're a robot that's missing pointy ears because you're just like Spock. Remember that?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I think that's a nice little I'm joking about it, but I think it was actually written really well because, one, they never address him as Admiral McCoy. They just say an admiral. He says he's 137 years old, which is how old the guy who plays Bones actually was. What's his name? I can't remember
DeForest Kelly.
DeForest Kelly. That's a made-up name. These are the made-up
names.
That's
his Civil War name when he fought in the Civil
War. That's exactly. These are the names of actors on Star Trek. These are not character names from the fictional TV show. Gates McFadden, LeVar Burton.
Michael
DeForest
Dorn.
Kelly. Dude, these are the greatest names ever. They're fucking fantastic. But yeah, he's at the end of the first episode, they're like, Data, you're Spock.
Yeah. Relatable.
Riker is basically Kirk to the point where he even looks a lot like Kirk.
Yeah.
He does.
Check out this guy. He calls it like it is. He has sex with women and he knows karate.
He knows a karate or two. Yeah. Dude, it's great. It's funny because this show does something really well. If TNG does anything really well, it's imagining new technology that became reality.
Right.
And it's not even like they were trying to do that, but for the uninitiated, Data is the second officer after Riker, which gets introduced in this. He's Lieutenant Commander, who gets introduced in this episode, and Data is an android. And he's a compendium of all human knowledge, all except he's not a human being, and that's all he wants to be, which creates really great empathy between the character and the viewer, or the viewer and the character. And in the first episode, Data's like, I'm Google, all except the internet's not even invented yet, or Google.
Right.
And it's fantastic. Picard's like, Data, search this shit. And Data's like, no problem. I don't know who Snoop Dogg is. He's like, what is to Snoop?
And then he opens his mouth and Snoop Dogg's voice comes out when they're on trial.
Dude, it's great.
I think this show does that really well into making you believe that maybe not now, maybe not in 200 years, but in a long time, this could happen.
Right.
Because they do those things that, like, especially experiencing this show for the first time now, because you can make those connections, be like, oh, this was made in 87.
Right.
But, like, these things kind of exist now, and that's kind of interesting that they kind of, like, were on the cusp of these creations.
Yeah.
But then also they're like, by the way, there's like post-atomic horror or whatever it was, like all these crazy things that happened to the Earth and to humans.
Right.
And like, I don't know, that's one of my favorite parts of the show.
I wanted to talk about this because this
that
is, this
trial
is
scene
yeah.
is so rad.
Oh,
go ahead and take it up. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I made a note that said they do a lot of like universe building, and that's something that the original Star Trek doesn't do, because even the films had to find their way. Like, Star Trek is as evolving as it is long in terms of how long it's been on the air or in theaters. Like, it's always finding itself, so it's always changing. And there are some things even in this episode that are not canon. Like the year when they say they're in their trial actually happens after the warp drive is discovered by Zefram Cochrane. So like there's some years that are off, but like a lot of this is like, they, you know, what, how did humanity get to this point? Like, what,
absolutely,
what got us here? Like, we had to go through a third world war, a nuclear holocaust, to like emerge as like these quote unquote enlightened beings, which is what humanity's on trial for in this episode. So,
and I think that's so neat because it goes ahead and says, hey, this is so far in the future that even crazier shit happens on Earth before we get up there.
Right.
And I think that makes it even more real because you're like, wow, yeah, I guess that could happen.
Right.
Or these fucking cops walking around doing drugs.
Right. Yeah, dude, sniffing in drugs.
It's great that this show picked up the mantle of like some of the footnotes that were made in the original series, like the eugenic wars. There's like the clone thing, or the early 21st century, like nuclear holocaust and all that. And it does a great job of making like all these allegorical allusions to like the worst things that we've ever experienced and putting them in the fictitious context of the 300 years between when the show was being made and when the show fictitiously takes place. So there's like some Cold War allegory at some point, you know, nuclear war, I guess. What would you say? What's the word? Sort of like cautionary tales,
like references.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
especially at the time when the threat of a nuclear war was a little bit more real than it probably is right now. I mean, I know there's a lot of tension at the moment, but back in 87, I guess we were coming out of that. But that was something very real to people watching the show because they had just lived through it.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was at such a peak then. That's when Alan Moore wrote Watchmen. You know what I mean? Like, that was when.
Right.
You know, everybody was like, "Oh, it's going to happen tomorrow. We're going to get nuked."
But this series, like much more so is like you said earlier, Dom. Like that, the old series was the Cold War allegory, 100%. Klingons and Romulans were the Russians. They were the bad guys. And in this show, there's a fucking Klingon on the bridge of the Enterprise.
Whoa! Yeah. First episode! Everybody who was a fan of the original series, they were like, blasphemy.
Yeah.
Dude, nerds were going off the chain.
Off the chain. Another note right there in the episode
there it
notes.
Is.
Off the chizane right there. Dude, let's talk about John DeLancey and how he fucking...
He's great.
...chews the scenery to bits, and he's so good. You're less than 5 minutes into this show... Q shows up, played by John DeLacy, who is an awesome voice actor. A lot of people know him as Discord on My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. Or maybe only I know him as that, guys.
Of course I knew that.
But he's like the series' main antagonist. I wouldn't say villain.
I don't want to spoil it.
Well, instead of him being an intellectual foil...
He's not what he appears to be always.
Exactly. Right. And I think this episode does a good job of it because humanity has come so far and now it needs to go even further on itself.
Right.
And
right.
I think Q is there to be like, hey, guys, let's get better a little bit.
Right.
I mean, he's an antagonist, but he's not really a villain.
He's
so
not
much,
the villain.
Although he does oppose a threat.
I wrote a note that said Q represents human self-doubt or fear.
Bingo.
Whereas,
home run.
A great A-plus. Note.
Whereas Picard is the antithesis. Picard is self-assured.
Right.
Move ahead. We're going to do this. Humanity, let's go. you know.
I don't feel comfortable around children.
The thing about Picard is he represents represents the human condition in such a way. He knows what fear is, but he's willing to fly in the face of it, even if it means, you know, his own self-sacrifice, which he does constantly. Right. But Q, time and time again, remind him that he's not the epicenter of the universe.
Right.
That, you know, it's like, listen, Jean-Luc Picard, you may be enlightened, but not all humanity is.
Right.
You,
absolutely.
And he asks, so again, like, we're getting into, like, the length of the series, but
they play with that a lot. And
it
turns out that Picard is pretty much, like, the perfect enlightened human being.
Right, that's big.
Spoiler alert, Picard is a big swinging dick.
Yeah, Picard, right. Yeah.
And the trial is representative of that. Q asks Picard to stand up as the one to speak for all of humanity. So
right.
Q is both he's a ubiquitous, omnipresent, omnipotent maybe being. We're never really told.
Yeah, he's pretty omnipotent.
He's Puck to the Midsummer's Night Dream character that Picard
real
represents.
World San Francisco.
I have a
Do
Real World San Francisco joke queued up, Dom.
Well, I don't like him.
Dom, I have a Real World San Francisco joke queued up, you motherfucker. You ripped the carpet out from under me, I swear to God. All right, so then Q turns a guy into a popsicle. He's a red shirt and a minority, so we get that out of the way right away.
And so we're like, this guy's real bad.
He's a space Indian, but not like a space Native American. That's later in the series, like a space Indian from India.
Right.
And then he turns him into a popsicle, and he's in blackface for some reason when he's like the Inquisition man.
Q isn't in blackface? What are you talking about?
Listen, I just watched it. There's something going on there.
He might be a little more tan.
Michael Dorn's
a
little
bit
in blackface.
In blackface.
I mean, Michael Dorn's in blackface, right?
He doesn't have, like, those crazy, like, racist lips going on.
No.
That's, like, blackface.
No, Q always, he always shows up. He always, like, takes on the persona of a character to sort of, like, I guess get his, like, point across. Again, he's like a trickster, like a...
He dresses up as captains. That's his thing. Because he... Right. Appears always as a captain
because it infuriates Jean-Luc Picard.
Right.
Also as a superior
because because he makes him he just like again like he likes antagonizing him. He just you know he's just such an instigator.
Well, he throws it in his face because it's like all these captains have come before you. It's nothing. You know you that title almost means nothing to me because I can turn into anything.
Right.
Like
that's a good theme of the show going on right early there in the beginning because. Humanity had to. I wrote a note also about Kardashev's scale, the scale that it's a theoretical scale that says, like what rank a civilization would be. There's like rank zero, rank one. Rank zero is like what we are. We can't even harness the power of our own planet as you know to get anywhere. Mm-hmm. So we're not even there yet, but. So, like, humanity had to go through all these steps, and then later in the episode, they come across somebody who's exploiting something else to get to that point. And and Q sort of is doing the same thing. Q is an omnipotent being. He can just fucking make shit happen all the time. He just snaps his fingers and, like, oh my god, there's a fucking 21st century courtroom.
Right,
oh my god, there's a guy in bubble wrap, you know what I mean? Like,
dude, they were in those Velcro wall jumpsuits that you used to wear when you go to, like, Sportland America.
Yeah.
The show was 80s as shit.
Yo, I drew a picture of one of those guys and it scares me.
It's creepy. If cops started wearing that now, I would be gone. I'd
Dude,
be like,
what
I'm
are those?
Moving.
What are those wrist machine guns from? They're definitely a prop from another movie.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know.
Someone leave a comment. Sure. Tell me what movie they're from. Yeah. But yeah, man, like Worf's like, yo, Q, you can't come in here and boss people around. And he goes like Mr. T style on him because again, it's the '80s,
right?
But like,
and he
has
one of Mr. T's smaller gold chains around his his body.
But dude, this show does a fantastic job again, Josh. Like you said, like of measuring, I guess the idealism of like where a society wants to be versus like where it is,
right?
You know, and I think I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm just gonna say there's a lot of things in this show that seem amazing.
Right.
They seem wonderful. But in reality, also, they would be pretty weird. Like, the one part, they're like, where's Data? And the computer's like, Data's on deck 4, jerking Dude. Off in his own closet. Like, why the fuck would I want anyone to know where the fuck I was all the time? Like, that would suck, man.
Dude, so, man, in a utopian future, you know, people just know it's, you gotta jerk off sometimes. It's okay. Yeah. It's not a big deal. Don't worry about it.
Sometimes you got a J.O.
in your own closet, like a weirdo.
Dude, I love when, yeah, I like took notes as I was watching the show, like just questions. The show, the technobabble and the fictional the science fiction that the show invents is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And like you said, Josh, like it does a really good job of sort of like grounding what would otherwise be like a batshit insane universe in these very
if you or I were placed in this universe, we would be fucking in 400 years from now. We wouldn't know what the fuck was up. We'd be like, I don't know what this shit is. It would be like a fucking sailor from the fucking 1600s coming to our house tomorrow and being like, what is this fucking magic?
Exactly.
No, check it out. It's the internet.
No, it's just the internet.
It's funny. You know, you see some boobies, too.
You see a cat on there. He, you know, he says, I can has, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't know. It's the show, the pacing is so excellent. Okay, hear me out. The pacing of every episode of this show is archetypal, or rather representative of the archetype set in the second half.
Right.
First, you get in your encounter with the conflict. Then you're introduced to like some interesting or intriguing characters, whatever. And then you get the slice of life with those characters, like hopes and dreams and struggles. And then there's the conflict resolution, like the mystery is solved at the end. The formula is it's like followed like throughout like most of the show, and it works so well. Because everything is so fantastic and so alien. Otherwise, like a regular viewer would be like, what the fuck is this crazy science fiction show? Like, I don't care about this techno babble. I don't care about warp drive and all that stuff. But that's not what's important. What's important is hearing Data say, oh, you know, I'm a superior being to you, but I want to be less superior. I want to be like you. And then watching like a human look at that and be like, I don't understand. And like, I don't know. And the conflict between like the two of them, like the conflict is internal. It's a very introspective show. And that's what like opens it up to like a wider audience instead of it just being like, the future, get it. Everything's wonderful. And it's like, yeah, I don't think anybody would watch that show. I think a lot of shows have tried to recapture, the alien fantastic ideas that this show introduced.
But yeah, what's
but
great?
They
what's
miss the
great,
mark because they don't have like the human lightning rod to ground everything to. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
This show is genius because what it does is it takes away all other motivation. There's no money. No one has any money.
Right.
There's no. You don't get to own your own spaceship. You don't.
What?
In fact, Josh, that's punctuated by the fact that the other races that the alien races that the Enterprise encounters, and I don't mean alien races other than a human. But that is sort of weighed on the scale like throughout the show. But there are other races that are still preoccupied with that. And it seems so laughable to you in the audience. Like the Ferengi, they want money and the Romulans want power. And it's, it runs in such conflict with the fact that like the human spirit is an idea of like self-discovery and curiosity and endeavoring into the unknown.
Right. They boil it down. They take away all that other shit that would
cloud
your
mind.
And you're
like, look
how
stupid that is.
And then, they leave you with just like, okay, what's left? What's left now? Well, I guess we better go try to be better people.
And that's why, Q has to be in this show.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
He is absolutely necessary to, you know, holding the mirror to the crew, but also the audience.
Right. Yes.
You know, like,
and
the type of audience this got at the time is kind of essential to that, in my opinion.
Right.
Yeah, man.
Me being a nerd, I don't know. I feel real good after watching this episode again. When I watched it before, I maybe was half paying attention. But watching this episode again really enlightened me. I feel really good about human beings after watching this episode.
Which is the magic of Star Trek. It's why I love Star Trek.
Same.
And I won't get on my soapbox here too much, but I think new Star Trek could use a dash of this. I don't feel good. I don't feel good after watching Guns the movie.
New Star Trek is old Star Trek, right? Because that's what audiences. That's what movie audiences want to watch.
But even Captain Kirk of the original series, like, was like, no, I'm not going to kill that guy, that lizard.
Sure, sure.
Because I'm an enlightened, merciful human
traveler.
Being.
You know? We are on a trek. Through the stars, Josh.
Oh, Star Trek.
Let's talk about when Picard says saucer sep. Like in the future, you can't say separation.
Saucer sep?
Saucer sep.
Well, how about when Riker comes aboard and he's like, all right, put this ship back together, homie. And he's like, I got this. And he's like, okay, we'll put the ship back together. He's like, nah. I'm doing this.
Yeah, he wants to do it himself. Yeah.
Guys.
And then when the ship starts coming back together, this theme comes back in, and I wrote lyrics.
Oh, yeah.
And it goes...
Go on.
Hey, Star Trek is back. It's fucking Star Trek. The ship comes apart.
Star Trek, the ship.
The ship. Dude.
Because, like, as a nerd, you're like, yeah, it's a Star Trek. Yeah, it's a...
Yeah.
Oh, my golden ring.
Crossover reference. For those who
you're
don't know.
Like, holy shit. Like, even in this episode, watching it again, you're like, wow. Okay, yeah, the ship comes apart.
Yeah, they did this a few more times, and then they're like, why did we do this?
Why did we do it?
Well, because at the time, it brings in a huge...
Right.
Like, to see that in 87 as average Joe drinking
a
beer,
show.
Watching TV on a Sunday afternoon or whatever you're doing, you see that, you're like, hang on. Hey, Dave, have you seen this Star Trek? The ship comes apart.
The saucer seps.
It also is like a plot point too, because they make a big deal in this one about the kids, and it's a joke like, aha, Picard doesn't like kids, but like this is a universe where essentially military personnel bring their children on an aircraft carrier with them, which is fucking crazy. That would never happen today.
But it is for the advancement of the human race,
right?
But not just human race, because you see. A Spock or two walking around.
There's a child Spock.
Guys, there's
well,
a
like
guy
Captain,
in a mini
like
dress?
Captain Kirk says, everyone is human, Spock. And then Spock says, that's racist. He does.
I remember that. I actually remember that. Guys, the guy in the mini dress, that was the most progressive thing on television until Pedro. I'm telling you, until Pedro in the real world. Dude, there's a guy in a mini dress, and I'm like, way to go, TNG. 1987, breaking down barriers on syndicated television.
Yeah.
Dumb.
There's an episode of Cheers that deals with a character coming out.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have a mini dress on.
I mean, why is...
He's not walking around in a mini dress, but he was a catcher on a baseball team.
Hey, does a mini dress make you gay? Because if it does, I'm the gayest guy on the planet. Let
That's
me tell
true.
You.
I'll be honest. I wish I could wear a dress here and there.
I don't think I could do it.
Sometimes I wear big baggy basketball shorts.
I don't have legs as good as like the girls in the first part of the show, but you know, I got pretty nice legs.
Yeah.
So you talked about the theme. For our younger viewers who haven't watched a lot of like syndicated shows or shows from this era, the theme of the show, the opening theme of the show, when that would play during an episode, that's when you knew shit was about to go down.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the only episode of TNG where that happens, because they were like, we're not going to be like everybody else, or we're not an action show. Like if the theme came on during the A-Team, they were building something, or Airwolf.
Yeah,
Airwolf was about to explode something.
Explode somebody.
And then Knight Rider.
The Kit car was about to go turbo.
Tonight, C-Boost. Yeah. Turbo.
Yep. I think it also had something to do with the fact that they were like, guys, we only have one song right now.
Dude, that's exactly dumb.
I could hum something, perfect. But I don't like the ship hums. So, also, by the way, I would like the ship hum noise to be my go to bed sound.
I love it.
Like, just when I'm trying to sleep, there's just a ship hum.
I hope when I'm in a coma someday that, like, that's the noise I hear when I go into a diabetic coma at some point. That's just the noise that plays all the time in the background in my head.
Hey, how about those magic apples?
Wait a minute. Let's talk about what he was a magician, grappler, Zom. What was his name?
Farpoint Governor Helen Hunt was his name.
Do you know who that is? Do you know who that guy is?
That's in a lot of stuff.
It's Michael Bell. That's Mr. 80s cartoon man.
Oh,
that's the he's every character on G.I. Joe, every character on Transformers. He's all the adults in Rugrats. And he's like in every video game ever. Michael Bell is a major, major voice actor. And sort of like a Cam Clark kind of, you know, guy. And the second I heard his, when I was watching a couple weeks ago, the second I heard his voice, I was like, that's Michael Bell. And I go to the internet and I'm like, yeah, dude.
You mean your data machine?
I said data. Is that data?
I'm referring to the internet
is
now
that,
as data.
Is that Duke from G.I. Joe? And he was like, yes, it is, Mike. And I was like, oh, thank you very much. But dude, let's talk about other characters. Shang Tsung is in this episode.
Shang Tsung is in this episode with a little person.
With a little person. Hold on. Super spoiler for the series. How smart of the producers was it to bring back those extras for the series finale?
Yeah, they...
unless I'm just being really racist and they're different little people and they just look the same to me.
But yeah, that's the whole... You just gave away the whole series.
I'm almost positive that happens. But Shang Tsung's not in the series finale. He had done Mortal Kombat by that point. Dude, he's the bailiff in the Q Nuremberg trials. How subtle is that with the giant hawk like behind them?
The
Takate logo.
The Takate.
I was like, oh yeah, the court of Takate.
I want to get some beer.
And then I could have swore one of the extras that comes on, like one of the ensigns. Mm-hmm. What do they call the guys who take the comm? Who are those ensigns?
Well, one of them is Chief O'Brien.
They introduced you to like 90% of like the show's regular cast in the very first episode. It's fantastic.
Yeah, Chief O'Brien would be on another show too.
One of them looked like Patrick Duffy. He wasn't doing Dallas that week.
They do have 2 hours to do it, right? But they get everyone's personality across within the first two sentences, I would say.
It's such good writing.
This is almost a flawless pilot, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's great.
This episode is referenced 100 times throughout the series.
Wait, yeah, they talk about it a lot.
Remember that time we went to Far Point?
Dude.
Yes.
So something.
Play the movie where I won.
It's just a shot. Because Star Trek was like notorious for showing like the shots of the show or the movie in the movie.
In the movie,
yeah, like,
right?
When Riker comes aboard, he'd be like, catch me up to speed. Okay, why don't you watch the first half of this episode?
It's like, where are all these cameras? Why do they have these cameras?
Sensors.
In
they
space?
Got sensors, dude.
Number one, I would like to see Season 3, Episode 5.
Number one, cue up Data jerking off in his closet. They could do that if they wanted
to.
Dude, what's great about this episode, this pilot, and this series in general, is that it does something just like the X-Files episode did that we talked about, where this series doesn't – it references itself all the time, but it never dumbs it down. It just rewards people who have been like attentive throughout the whole series. And if you don't know something they're talking about, like usually I'm like really curious and I like want to go like find out what it is. And it's so rewarding because it makes me feel smart as a viewer. That's what it does so well. Like when Bones shows up, like when DeForest Kelly shows up, who's not in makeup, by the way,
that's what he looks actually like. Not in makeup. That's
not in 1987, nonetheless. Right. 30
he still
years
lived
ago.
For another, I don't know, 10 years after this.
But it's such tasteful fan service because they're never like Data's not like, didn't they call you Bones McCoy?
Right.
It's just like,
why, yes, they did back in the 60s.
It's just like, this is the guy. If you know who it is, you know who it is. If not,
I think that's both great service to the fans and also just great storytelling, because there is nothing more – the funniest comedy sketches are the ones you get halfway through. You're like, oh, shit, just figured it out. It's hilarious. That's why great references are amazing, because if you get them, you feel like an A-plus student.
Right. Dom, bingo. There's no needless exposition that like makes – that it's like dismissing me away from having to think about the show. You know, like – in fact,
we could go ahead and spell this out, or it's not necessary, and we could just leave it for the people who want it.
Right, and when they do give you a little bit of those like history, like Star Trek universe history cram courses, they just give you bits and pieces. What happens to Wesley's father is Wesley Crusher, whatever the fuck, who cares? But
yeah, he's the worst character.
He's the worst character ever. But there's like
Mr. Picard. I peed myself.
There's maybe a half a dozen episodes of this series that discuss Picard's relationship to Wesley via his dead father, and it's not until like the fifth out of six episodes—I don't even know how many it really is. Like, it's not until like the second to last time they ever talk about it where they're ever like, "Oh, by the way, this is what actually happened to him."
Yeah,
like all the time, they're just like, "Oh, my dad died, and Captain Picard was there for me and my mom."
Right,
and you're like, Okay.
And maybe he wanted to bang her?
I have to remember that for later, I guess. Something.
Right.
It gives you like these breadcrumbs to follow. And you just get so enveloped in this universe. I'll tell you what series ate this series so well was Futurama. And it came right on the heels of it because the show ended in 97 and Futurama started in 99.
It ended in 94. I'm sorry. No, I don't want to.
Oh, 94. I apologize. That's right. I'm sorry. You, but no. I was thinking 87. And also, I'm an idiot.
I'm just being a commenter. I'm just saving you the trouble.
Actually, wow. Futurama did do that really well, where whenever they went to the past, they showed you a little something.
Yeah. Right.
Like, and whole Nibbler's whole scene is really neat.
Right. Dude, and the way they just, like, wrapped that back around and all. And obviously, Futurama plays a huge homage to this series and to, like, the Twilight Zone and whatnot. To the point where, like, there were episodes that were almost identical in plot and structure to this.
You mean the scary door?
including the Star Trek episode.
Yeah. It was man all along. including the episode where they actually encounter the original series cast and everything. Yep. But,
Breaking Bad will easily be one of the top shows of the 10s, right?
Mm.
But in comparison to Next Generation, it does not hold a candle. I feel like they have to spell out so many things in that show. Like, very rarely are things like revealed where the viewer can go, "Oh my god, I figured it out before they showed it."
Right.
You know, like it was everything came at you in like, "Oh, A happened, then B happened, then C happened, then D happened."
Right, it's like a journey on a linear line. And this series, if you watch all of it, is literally the exact opposite.
Yeah, it is the Dagwood. It's Scooby and Shaggy are there, and they're shuffling all types of things in there.
Right.
And you're going to have a great, tasty, big sandwich if you watch the whole
thing. Dom, you know what? You said Scooby, and it reminded me about something we talked about earlier, that Riker, in this series, introduces a fantastic element where you can have an A and B storyline where it doesn't feel like Shaggy and Scooby go off in one direction, then Fred and Velma go off in the other.
Right.
Like, what you have instead is you have two captains leading two A plot storylines. So every episode had like two A plot or one, at least one, you know, main storyline, but usually there were two. There was very rarely where, I mean, seventh season kind of suffers a little bit, and there are filler episodes because it was 25 episodes.
It's 24.
Seasons.
It's not just 10 episodes. Right. Maybe at your own goddamn leisure, do half a season and do the other half.
Yeah. Exactly. And you have to connect the dots and you have to follow everything, and it's such an investment, and maybe that's what turns people off more so than the ship flying around in space. But as much as people give like Trekkies a bad name and they were sort of the laughing stock of, like, I guess, you know, geek subculture for a long time, there was plenty of great homage to this series, and this series set up so much excellent science fiction to follow in its wake.
This series made Star Trek popular.
Legitimate,
like,
right? Yeah.
Like, I mean, they made popular, six movies for the original series, and a lot of those movies are pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
But without this series, like, they wouldn't be fucking making the J.J. Abrams Star Trek.
Right.
You know, they wouldn't be doing it, because this show was it hit something inside. This is what Star Trek was supposed to be.
From the beginning.
I think, if not for this show. And I would say the same for Doctor Who.
Right.
Like, if Doctor Who in the 70s, and they kept making it, but, like, only really Doctor Who fans watched it.
Right.
Until, like, real recently when they kind of, like, I guess in 2007, I don't know when they really relaunched Doctor
2005.
Who. 2005. So I think that is a good comparison to TNG in the sense that it was like, oh, look at this whole new world.
Right.
Right. This is a time capsule of writing from another era that I'm glad that we can help share with people like 25 years later. You know, hopefully people will go watch it.
Nothing made me more happy than to see people say, "I'm watching Star Trek for the first time because of this podcast."
Right.
And I would say most of the people who said that came back and said how much they loved the episode.
It only gets better. The show
only gets better. This show.
Get this. Not to spoil it.
No.
But how about this adventure in space? A robot learns stand-up comedy. Stay tuned, fellas.
With Joe Piscopo. Yeah. That happens, and it's
SNL
painful.
Alum Joe Piscopo.
Joe Piscopo.
SNL alum. At the time, it made sense.
Yeah, Dom, maybe. What that episode, spoilers, we should do a whole segment. Remember we talked about like doing like segments about arcs of episodes, maybe? We should do a segment about just the holodeck episodes. Because this episode introduces, like, the pilot introduces a lot of things in the universe, but doesn't really explore them. We kind of get, like, an exploration of what the holodeck really is in the episode The Big Goodbye, which is a couple episodes down the line in the first season, with Dixon Hill. Isn't that his name?
Dixon Hill, yeah.
Dixon Hill, yeah. But we should do maybe, like, a run of just the holodeck episodes, because they're so interesting.
That'd be fun. Maybe we could do one or two of them for an episode.
They're great one-offs. So, like, within the Star Trek universe, it's so crazy and so many things are can happen.
Except for the Robin Hood one. That one's stupid.
No, that would Q does it a couple times. When they're like, we can't go back to that holodeck well too many times, it's like, all right, well, then Q makes them go back in time or something.
Well, Q comes back, spoilers, many times.
Yeah.
And sometimes are extremely serious. Sometimes they're not serious at all. Sometimes they're kind of not serious, but then it turn out to be serious. Like, he's all over the fucking map, dude. He's like, he's Gazoo. He's fucking Gazoo.
He's Gazoo. Bingo. We the three of us, like the X-Files, we need to come up with, like, a roadmap to guide people through, like, the absolute must-watches and, like, the myth arc episodes or the bottle episodes.
We'll do that with this show, Mike.
We should make a podcast where we do that.
People will watch this episode, and they'll probably go on and binge-watch it like you did with X-Files, hopefully. And we'll hopefully bring them back to episodes they already watched, but also introduce new people to them.
All right.
Bingo, bango!
I'm forgiven! My brothers and sisters of the Continuum have taken me back. I'm immortal again! Omnipotent again!
Swell.
Hey guys, I got two last points to bring up to you about this episode. And hopefully it'll be a transition to the end of me talking ad nauseum about this episode and about the show, because I love it so much.
We could talk about this all night.
Let's talk about it all night.
That's the thing. That's what I love about this show, is that I live in LA, you guys live in Pennsylvania. I want to have these conversations with you. This is the only way we get to have those conversations.
I'm a little hype on this episode. I'm sorry. I think I was talking over people a little bit, had a little diarrhea of the mouth this episode.
Who are you apologizing to?
The audience, I had
coffee.
We've been
your friends for a long time.
It
never stopped us from being your friend before.
Yeah. Was this the first time I ever talked to you?
I'll be more focused next episode. This was 2 hours. This is a lot of things.
Dude, I was going off the chain.
Dude, yeah, we're going off the chain. That's a syndication station. Going off the chain. There's 10 minutes left in this episode. Encounter at Farpoint. Part 2, 10 minutes left. Uh-huh. And that's when we finally get the prototypical TNG mystery is solved, like the wrapping up.
Too much air in a balloon.
There was a lot of things this episode tried. Yeah. One of the things that it really succeeded at, and that we sort of had we sort of see again later, is there's a dialogue at the end that we're allowed to really focus on that brings us to the conclusion of the story where the music disappears. Mm-hmm. The sound design is very important, and sometimes there's space jellyfish. And you might be like, what the fuck is going on? But you realize that even though they're space jellyfish, that's not the point. The point was, I don't really know what the point of this episode was. The plot of this episode kind of sucked. But it gets a lot better from here on out. And, you know,
the point is, we didn't fuck somebody's life up.
Right. Or even though there are rules to protect the greater good.
Right.
Sometimes compassion for an individual is more important. There's all kinds of life lessons that you get.
Oh, yeah.
The Absolutely. Execution is great in this episode, even though the plot's kind of mediocre or whatever. But, you know, there are times that the show pulls a rabbit out of its asshole, but, like, you know, that was really graphic. But
I imagine.
But in the last 5 minutes, sometimes you can really pull the strings, Dom. I mean, what you know, don't you think?
Here's the thing, guys. I'm going to be honest. My eyes were full of tears in that last shot.
Yeah, man.
How could you not? Here's why this show is so great, and I've probably said that 3 times already, but
we've all said it so many times.
It says, hey guys, if you're troubled by the way things are currently, like at the time, what, this was Reagan, right? 87?
Yeah.
So if you're troubled by what's going on now and you're not happy with it, you know, just hold tight, because things are going to get a lot better. Things are going to get bad. Things are going to get really bad.
Right.
But in the end, things are going to be so great that human beings are going to go into space and they're going to open up this fantastic new world. And human beings are going to be able to help things that you can't even understand, that the characters don't even understand. But they're going to impact lives
right
in a positive way, because in the end, peace and love prevail, and good prevails.
And
I think that's why I teared up, because that is a beautiful thing to say in the first episode. It grabs you and says, hey, guy, you know, I know you're probably bothered by everything in the world. Everything bothers you. But, you know, things are going to get better one day. And I think that's something true that everyone can hold in their lives, is that as troubled as you might be at a certain point, things are going to get better.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
The last lines are Troy. She's like, joy and gratitude.
Yeah.
That's the whole point, is like, that's their lives, is to fulfill like a more positive, you know, role in the universe. Not just Earth, not just a fucking, you know, the moon, like in the universe. Like, for all time, forever.
When Roman Greco-Roman grappler Zom, or whatever his name is able to let go of the petty pursuits he had,
mm-hmm.
you know, then he can be free. Then the jellyfish can be free, and we can all be free.
Yep.
From the opening intro, from the sequence, the opening sequence of the show, which we didn't even talk about, and how wonderful it is, how even that inspires such a sense of awe and such a sense of adventure, and like, you know, to boldly go. It's so great. And like, you know, the music, the ambient music, and like the ship and everything. God, it's so engaging.
It's
perfect.
I think a lot about that Hubble Deep Space image mm-hmm. when I see that intro.
Yeah.
Because that, I feel like there's nothing more humbling. Yeah. There's nothing more humbling in our existence than that image, like to me, because it's like, oh my, like we are basically at this point, like anything that is bothering you right now, it is nothing. It means nothing.
Right.
Man, I think this is a really great pilot. It's not the best. It's a great episode of this show. It's the pilot, maybe as far as pilots go or introductory episodes go, like compared to the X-Files episode, which we watched, which maybe people have for a comparison point, I don't think it's as good. The show gets like about 90% of the way with its characters in the short time that it has to introduce us to all of them, but they really flesh out, and the actors especially grow into the roles in particular. Bert Spriner's, you know, his portrayal as Data, it gets masterful towards the end of the series.
Yes.
You know, and maybe we'll talk about that. We'll obviously talk about that more as we go into more episodes.
Do more TNG episodes. Dude, I can't wait for the next TNG episode.
I know.
But Star Trek The Next Generation, and why we wanted to use this show for our series, is famous in writing and in tropes for introducing the term known as growing the beard, or to grow the beard. Dom, you said it the other day, uniforms and collars, which I like that too as the trope. So for those who don't know, there's a old-timey trope from Happy Days, which was this show, whatever, you can look it up, called Jumping the Shark. The show had gone on for so long, and they had exhausted every plot line it possibly could, and just was, the network was running it into the ground because it was still a profitable show to have on the air, that in one episode, Fonzie, played by Henry Winkler, he water skis over a shark.
Yeah, in a lake.
And that's sort of the madness and the low quality that the show had gone to. So there is this cliche then that, or rather this idiom.
That's where Jumping the Shark comes from.
Right. The idea that like when a show gets so bad, or Nuking the Fridge, other people might be familiar with from Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Yeah, it's
a little different, but when
I think
a show,
you made that one up. but it's pretty good, Sador.
When a show jumps the shark, it's a moment where there is a specific moment where the quality of the show is noticeably less, or it's a real turning point for the show to just, you know, the perpetuation of the show is a cynical money grab at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek The Next Generation, even though the seventh season sort of suffers from not having the best plot lines, this show only got better the longer it went on. And the idiom that this show coined was known as growing the beard, because Jonathan Frakes, who plays Commander Riker.
Get it right, Mike.
Commander Riker in the second season, inexplicably one episode, shows up with a beard. they also start wearing different. They get rid of the mini skirts, and the uniforms look a lot more military. And it's
and Deanna's booty gets so wild.
She gets real big. There are times where the show is a little exploitive and a little, you know, it objectifies its female cast a little bit. But it's television. I'm not excusing it away. It's just going to happen. That's not okay. It just again happens. But this show, there's a marked improvement in quality in this show after Riker grows a beard. Or as Dom says, this, or the crew puts on uniforms with collars. So as the longer you watch the show, the better it gets. And season six, there's very little that can compare in television, in my opinion, to how great season six is and the plot lines they come up with and all. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It really is something.
Well, Josh, you have any closing thoughts before we move on to the comments?
I love Star Trek. I'll always love Star Trek. This is Star Trek. This is what if this you want to watch Star Trek, this show is Star Trek. Don't watch fucking anything else. Don't even start with this. Don't watch Deep Space Nine, even though it's great.
Deep Space Nine is great, but it's not Star Trek. It's just
this is what you gotta watch.
Angry human condition. The show.
Yeah. Right.
Well put. Well put.
It's the darkest.
Well,
the
why don't you say we move on? See what some other people thought.
Let's do that.
Sounds good. Enough of us talking.
Engage.
All right. Well, now we turn the microphone over to you, the listener. You know, before we start here, I got to make a note. Red Xena on Reddit went ahead and made a syndication station subreddit, mm-hmm. and it's kind of the perfect place for this because when you comment on Twitter, Twitter's stupid and it doesn't allow you to sort your interactions at all.
Right.
And Facebook is really silly with their layout, but the subreddit is really neat because you can start a thread for the episode. You can leave your comments. It's pretty neat. Talk to us however you want, but check out the subreddit. It's reddit.com/r/syndicationstation. Go ahead and subscribe. Leave your thoughts and, well, let's get right into it here.
Yes.
I have a question from @loslos8 on Twitter. They ask, how stylish do you think the old 21st century military uniform thingy Q wears?
Is he talking about the bubble wrap?
I'm not sure.
Because if it's the bubble wrap, that would help you in war.
Yeah. Dude, he's got drugs on like a janitor's keychain retractor. That's perfect for your drugs.
That kind of makes me sick, that moment where he takes the drugs right before he's killed because he knows he's going to die, so he gets high one more
time. Dude, he's got bump a line real quick, man. It was the 80s. Again, it was like 1987. Everybody was doing fucking cocaine.
Yeah.
That wasn't even like scripted. That was just a guy on set just doing coke.
He just told him there's cocaine in here. There's real cocaine.
Yeah, man, but I love it. He looks like the Michelin Man.
It is pretty neat. I thought it was really cool.
That's how bullets will just bounce right off you, then.
That's the way it works. @HeyWolf on Twitter says, Q is one of my favorite antagonists of all time and was a great way to introduce goofy/unorthodox plots later on. I think so as well.
I agree 100%.
I disagree.
Whoa!
I don't think he introduces a whole lot of goofy plots. He does sometimes, but a lot of times he's introducing the cast and the crew of the Enterprise to extremely serious things.
Yes.
I don't want to give it away.
Aside from the Robin Hood episode, but when you get the It's a Wonderful Life episode, it's a great way to break away from quote-unquote reality to sort of give you a different perspective on things. Right. I love Q. I think he's one of the most inventive and creative characters that's ever been introduced on any television show ever. And I really like those break from the, you know, main universe kind of things.
Sure, yeah, that's why the series has such depth.
You know, Josh, you're right. You're right.
@SJQTweets says, as someone who didn't watch TNG, does Picard go this hard all the time? I believe he means hard in the paint.
Dude, man, the guy goes ham, hard as a motherfucker all
the
time.
He gets way more hard. This episode,
he's pretty up there, though. He's like, kill it, shoot it. Actually, he doesn't do that at all.
There are some episodes where he's extremely emotional. You know, which is great to see. Like,
he breaks down. Breaks down a few times.
And I also like how he does the fake dressing down of Commander Riker in this episode, where he kind of like tests Will's limits.
Yeah,
and then he's like, "Ah, we'll be friends," and it's excellent. Yeah. And there are other times where he's incredibly soft and vulnerable, and even that is something you don't always see. Like. characters are so one-dimensional on television. Even House, which is one of my favorite TV shows like of all times, the character to the outside viewer is very...
Make a fart.
I farted a little bit.
Yeah, I did. Oh, yeah.
The character can seem very one-dimensional to the uninvested viewer, but with Picard, you get the full emotional range. Like, you know, it's not, you know, like... NCIS, where the guy's like, I'm very serious every episode. You have episodes where Picard cries. You have episodes where Picard screams at Wesley till his head almost falls off, which are my favorite episodes.
Right. He's the perfect man. Dude, he's the perfect man.
Speaking of Wesley.
Ham.
Speaking of Wesley, at Mafo Dope wants to ask Josh, would you warn Will Wheaton about that loose rock?
No. I would hope that he snapped his tiny, dumb neck.
You hate
even though I think the holodeck safety protocols were on, so he didn't die. But
Coyd, our friend Coyd, says, I very much enjoyed this first episode of TNG. What I found interesting is after a few minutes of typical intro first episode stuff, it hits full throttle and launches you into what I assume most episodes of the series are like. Much like the X-Files pilot, if you remove the character intros, you could have told me that this episode was from the middle of the season and I would have believed you.
Yep.
It's pretty neat.
Home
I
run,
think
Coyd.
So as well.
Truth.
He's done.
Why isn't he on this show?
Let's see.
Can I quit? Can he take my place? What's my contract for? One more episode? All right. Coyd, get ready.
Hey, Josh Rob says, I really enjoyed this early version of Q, a godlike being who tests humanity's worth, was an excellent foil for Picard. You know, our another listener, Dylan Dermeyer, says, and this is some pretty heavy stuff, I don't think they should have put Q in this episode. Whoa.
Whoa!
And then set him aside to do all of this establishing of the recurring stuff within the show. Josh?
I disagree completely. Q, like, in a lot of ways, like, is the show.
Mm-hmm.
He's the impetus for very major things that happen without getting into them. Mm-hmm. I really wish I could. I really wish I could just be like, here's why you're wrong.
Holy shit.
As our friend Red Xena from Reddit, who created the subreddit, says...
Yeah.
Q is the shit. Shit is in all caps.
Oh,
Q is the shit.
Q is the shit. Yo, who was my first man who said about Q being the foil? Because this guy was reading my notes.
Twitter
that
guy.
Was Hey Josh Rob.
Hey Josh Rob.
On Reddit.
I love it. I love you. But it's an interesting idea. What if you took Q out of... What if instead of man being tested, or Q testing humanity here for their worth in the first episode... Do you think the crew would have taken their encounter at Farpoint as seriously as they did? I almost...
Yeah, I think you could take Q out and it would be the same thing. Mm-hmm. I think that's...
It just wouldn't... The stakes wouldn't have been as high.
Right.
Noah Solomon, in response, almost in response, he wasn't replying. This was a separate comment, but it was right above.
Uh-huh.
Q and his trial set the standard for what the show was to be about, which was proving that we are not a completely worthless sack of poopy as a species.
That's what he says at the beginning. Space, the final frontier. We are not a complete sack of poopy, worthless sack of
species. Well, mon capitan, it proves that you guys aren't actually dog shit after all. Good job. Go enjoy the universe. Have fun.
Damon Reynolds says, Data's sweet nips.
Dude, the nips in the first couple episodes of like the first season are out of control before they come up with like a better costume or like a higher test material. The man nips. As we find out, spoilers, Data is fully functional male android.
He is.
Oh, yeah.
Daniel K. Harreen, sorry if I'm saying that wrong, says, the idea of humanity on trial for the mistakes of its past is a wonderful sci-fi concept, one that wouldn't work at all in other fantastical intellectual properties like Dune or Star Wars. I think that's an incredible note that's what sets Star Trek apart from the other ones.
Well, those other properties are more fantasy. They're more...
They're all about the human experience, except Star Trek is more about the human experience...
As we live it.
As in a reality sense. Yeah. Like,
Josh, Star Trek or Star Wars?
I love them both, and they both serve a purpose. I would say I probably know a lot more about Star Trek, and I don't know. I know a lot about Star Wars.
you do.
But
That says it, right?
Yeah, I think Star Trek, because it relates to your everyday life all the time. Like, you could go out and just, hey, Tay, I'm going to act like Picard. I want to do things like he would do.
You should do things like him, man.
Yeah.
He had his own maneuver and everything.
He does have his own maneuver. Dude is rolling deep. And finally, John Barber just says, also, that bowl may have had some of the shiniest apples I've ever
seen.
Dude,
how about those apples, man? I couldn't believe he bit into one. Yeah, that is TV magic, dude. He bit into it, and I was like, that's definitely plastic. He's going to die.
He's going to hurt a tooth. Well, thank you to everyone who's left a comment or tweeted at us. Feel free to do so in the future so we have more to talk about at the end of this episode. You guys bring up some great points.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, you can always reach us individually on Twitter. I think Dom made a great point, like the subreddit, which thank you again for making that. That's amazing. I don't even know how the Reddit works, but that's a good place, I guess. That's a good place for everybody to have a discussion.
Data, search the Reddit.
Data, Reddit. You know, like, Facebook kind of blows, so like, go to the Reddit, use that. That's awesome. And upvote things. Don't be a jerk, or else.
Do it.
Klingons will get you.
Oh my god.
For friendly purposes.
Michael Dorn grows his hair, his Klingon hair, the whole length
Shut
of the
Shut up, Michael Dorn.
Shut up, Space Dorn. Alright, guys, so before we go this week, Dom, did you have a game that you wanted us to play?
Well, I came up with this thing, and it can be a thing, it doesn't have to, but we'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
It's called Syndicate It. We are a station, after all. This is the syndication station.
You're right.
We're going to need some programming, am I right?
You're right.
Yeah, we need a lot of it.
Therefore,
to fill our programming schedule.
I propose that we, each episode, you bring a log line for your own episode of the existing show, or a spinoff of the show we just covered. And it could be serious, it could be goofy, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
For example.
Okay.
I have a show, it doesn't have a title, but it's a spinoff of TNG, and it's about two blue-collar guys who are just maintenance guys on the Enterprise, and they're like maybe like blue collar. They have Jersey accents somehow. That survived. that has gone forth to the Enterprise. And it's two guys. They do maintenance on the ship. And in their spare time, they're going to the holodeck and they're trying to find out which species in the universe gives the best HJ.
I would like to throw my hat into the ring as to be one of these guys on this show.
Josh, I don't want to say you were typecasted, but you were typecasted.
By hat, do you mean...
Let me work on my Jersey accent.
Well, where's Jerry?
Where's Jerry?
He's getting HJ in the holodeck. Hey!
Jerry.
Typical Jerry.
Josh, do you have one?
Mine was called Freaky Stardate 62.893, where Picard and a Romulan switch places in a transporter accident, and they gotta pretend like each one of them is the same guy, is a different guy.
But they learn about each other in the experience!
Exactly, and they relate to one another.
Oh man, I love that.
Mike,
do you think you could put one together?
I think I can come up with one off the top of my head. It's a buddy cop show, as are all my pitches. With
Who's it starring?
Starring Jordy LaForge and Data.
Data.
As black and not even tan. And it's like a play on black and tan. I'm a very clever writer. Data is very pale, if not green.
They call them white chocolate.
They're white chocolate, black and not tan. And then they ride around in holodeck cars and they solve mysteries on the holodeck. And but no, it's not. It's like a spinoff, but nobody else on the Enterprise knows it's happening. Sometimes they reference them.
They're like, what did Captain Picard say? And then, like, Data's like, oh, it's illogical.
Dude, like, sometimes people will be like, Beverly will be like, Geordi, where have you been all day? And he just, like, looks at Data and gives him a nod, and Data's like, winks and thumbs up. Yeah. And then it's a freeze frame, and the credits come up.
And it's a saxophone.
And the music is the exact same music as from Hardcastle and McCormick.
Yeah.
just because I want it to be in my head, it's like, drive like the devil in your dreams. And they're like driving in their holodeck car. I don't know why he was in holodeck car. I just imagine it would be.
Why is this show not on right now?
And like in the opening sequence, Data would like throw Geordi his visor and Geordi would like catch it on his face.
Yeah.
He'd like, shing, and it would make like a 80s gleam across it. Ching!
Oh my God. Data is so cool. By the way, Data is my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Data rules.
Real quick outro. What do you think, closing thought? Who do you guys think the main character of the show is? Is it Picard or is it
humanity?
Data? Oh my God, you blew my fucking mind, Josh.
Boom. Josh, you done did it again, you devilish dog.
Thank you.
I think it's the ship.
I think it's Earth.
Yo, the ship gets its own episode. Remember that episode?
Yeah.
Let's watch that episode sometime.
Hey, speaking of episodes, Mike.
Yeah.
What are we watching next week?
Oh, shit. We got to cue everybody up to what they're going to watch for the next episode of Syndication Station. The goddamn podcast we're doing.
Damn.
Oh, hell ass damn. All right, guys. Listen, next week, I think we're going to end up watching the episode. It's called The Obsolete Man. It's an episode of The Twilight Zone.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is not a pilot episode. We figured that since The Twilight Zone was an anthology and not a serialized television show like the other two series we've watched so far, that we'd hop into it, and as Dom queued me up for, instead of watching Nightmare 20,000 Feet or Time Enough at Last, which are sort of pop cultural referenced episodes of The Twilight Zone or episodes you may be familiar with even though you've never even watched the show, we would go for what Dom calls a deep cut. And this is an episode that stars Burgess Meredith, and it's not about aliens or magic.
Not really.
But we'll leave it for you to watch to decide what it's actually about. Again, The Twilight Zone, I believe it's season 2, episode 29. I think it's the 65th episode overall. It's called The Obsolete Man. And mm-hmm. Burgess Meredith, that's the Penguin from the original Batman series, a.k.a. Mick from Rocky, for those who don't know.
Yep.
Who also?
And, I can't wait. I was watching Twilight Zone the other night, and I love that show. Every 4th of July and New Year's, I would watch the marathons on Sci-Fi.
Oh my God,
on
Sci-Fi!
I still do.
Can you imagine?
It's
I actually
Siffy
have
Siffy now, but
Siffy.
Guys, can you believe it? I have a lot to say about the Twilight Zone and about that episode.
I can't believe it.
This is a little bit lighter watching than the 2 hours of Star Trek we made you watch. I think Twilight Zone.
Yeah, it's only a half hour.
Yeah, about 35 minutes, something like that. Yeah. And so we'll watch that, and maybe you guys can leave some really interesting comments or some questions, or maybe talk about the Twilight Zone as a whole. We'll probably be dipping into that well a whole bunch as the Syndication Station continues.
And tell us to watch an episode of something if you want us to.
Yeah, guys, recommend some shit, you know? A lot of you guys have actually tweeted at me and left me some suggestions for shows we're going to watch. Some are already on our docket, and some are really great suggestions. I don't want to say what they're going to be yet. I don't want to overload everybody with viewing material. But Dom had mentioned it at the top of the show. If you guys feel like continuing watching The X-Files or Star Trek Next Generation, we're definitely going to be talking about some more episodes from those series coming up. But I'm not going to tell you to watch 300 episodes of television shows. You know, take it easy. Everybody do their homework and go to bed when you're supposed to. Just for next week, The Obsolete Man on the Twilight Zone.
Yes.
And until then,
keep on syndication.
Doing whatever our catchphrase will be. Keep.
I think it's
engage
the show.
Number one, watch TV.
Nailed it. Keep on couch potatoing, you guys.
Keep on couch potatoing. See you next week.
Thanks, guys, for listening, and have a great one.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to another episode of Syndication Station. If you guys like the show, be sure to leave a comment on the iTunes page. It really helps us out. So go over there and do that. Engage. engage comments. Did you do it yet?